Well, investors love positive surprises, and a very positive surprise from Sappi with its financial results for the year to end September. Sappi is listed all over the world, so it produces quarterly results. So we have the fourth quarter, which makes these numbers even more interesting. Way above expectations, share price up 9% in direct, as a direct consequence. Chief Executive Steve Binney joins us. Thanks, Steve. Busy day. You guys being listed all over the world. And nice to see Sappi doing better than was anticipated. I suppose that's the big question that investors would have. What did you have that you were able to pull out and give such a good surprise with?
Yeah, look, we're very satisfied with the results. 2023 was a tough year for us. And what we've seen is a progressive improvement as we moved into 2024. As you reflect on the numbers overall, the pulp segment for us was very, very strong. It had tough times in 23, and I think perhaps maybe the market didn't anticipate such an improvement. On the paper side, a little bit slower to recover, but there was progressive improvement. And then on the other side, in terms of internal factors, we were able to take substantial costs out of the business, both fixed costs and efficiencies and variable costs as well.
And it was a very good quarter. But I guess when one looks at Sappi from the outside, this is a institution in South Africa. Sappi and Mondi, these two giants in the wood-based or forestry-based operations. You grow the trees, you process the trees, you sell what comes out of it. But in this day and age, when there's so much swing across the digital and also where there's so many substitutes that one can have for natural fibers, which is what you deal in, I guess there are plenty, plenty challenges. What are the growth areas, though, for you in your business?
Look, if I go back, say, 10 years when I moved into this role, Sappi was traditionally what we call a graphic paper business, which was high-end paper that went into advertising and high-end magazines and the like. At that point in time, we were about 80% of our business. And we've been going through a transformation over the last 10 years to redirect our production and our focus away from this traditional business towards higher margin, higher growth segments. And it's two broad areas for us. Firstly, on textiles, we make dissolving pulp, which we make in South Africa, and it's exported all over the world. We're the largest global producer of dissolving pulp. It goes to China, it goes to India, Indonesia, and the likes. And that's been a big growth market for us. It's growing about 6% per annum, and we continue to invest there. And then second broad area is on the packaging side. We made high-end coated paper for marketing and magazines. We've now redirected that to the packaging side. So it's not the brown packaging that you would see on things like televisions and fridges. It's the high-end coated packaging that you would see on electronic goods, cosmetics, whiskies, things like that. And because there's a big shift away from plastics towards paper, that's creating significant opportunities. So with all that in mind, we're now down to 45% on the traditional business. And in the next couple of years, with some conversions we've got underway, it will drop to 30%. So a significant transformation.
Before we go into what was the thinking behind it and how you managed to do that, which of course has got implications for many companies who are finding that the environment's changing, what exactly is dissolving pulp?
Dissolving pulp is essentially a type of pulp that's made from wood fiber, and it is essentially, you know, if you saw it, it looks like cardboard paper, but it's sold as pulp. It's dried and then it's sold to viscose manufacturers in China and India and the likes. And ultimately, it goes into a product. Many of your listeners and viewers may know rayon, which is a type of fabric that they would buy for their clothing. It's a high-end product that competes with cotton, and it makes up roughly about 8%, 7 to 8% of the global textile industry. As you know, polyester is the most predominant textile that you would get out there. That makes up about 70% of the supply. But that obviously comes from fossil-based fuels. With wood being a natural fiber, it has a much stronger sustainability message. And it's growing, as I said earlier, about 6% per annum. So very exciting opportunities. And the fact that, you know, we are the world's largest producer of the raw material that goes into that from South Africa, it creates exciting opportunities for us.
So as South Africans, we must get people to just wear more wood.
Indeed. And many people already do it, but they don't realize they're doing it.
the decision, though, to move across, it's one thing for a company to say, hey, our market that we're in is contracting. We need to move elsewhere. But many companies make the wrong decisions along the line. What shaped your strategy in this way? Where did you get inputs from to make the choice, for instance, as you've now explained, with dissolving pulp being a growing area?
Yeah, it's a tricky journey because, you know, we're a heavy industrial manufacturer, and our CapEx, you know, to convert a machine or build a new plant costs lots of money. So it's been a long journey, but a very carefully planned journey. What we did is we looked at our expertise, we looked at the asset base that we had, and in this industry, to be globally competitive, you need to be cost efficient. And we identified that the areas where we were moving into, we could be cost efficient, and that there was a market gap where we could move into. We couldn't do it overnight. Because it just costs lots of money to do that. So we've been on this progressive journey. Now, at the same time, and to add to the challenges, when I moved into this job, we had a lot of debt on the balance sheet from many years ago when SAPI went on a global expansion. So you had to carefully balance the capital allocation between keeping your debt under control, but making these investments to move into a new industry. And I think it's been very successful.
How far along that path are you right now?
I think we've got a big project underway at the moment in the US at a mill called Somerset, which is in the state of Maine. It's a big project, $420 million. Once that's completed, the graphic paper will be down to about 30% of our business. A few years back, when we rolled out our strategy, we set ourselves a target of getting it below 30. I think you're never at an end point on your strategy. It's a continuous journey, but certainly that's a key target, bringing it down to 30%. And we'll get there by the start of 2027.
Interesting, in the media industry, the industry that I work in, we've seen newspapers who used to be huge clients of SAPI in the past with newsprint. What's happened to that market? Has it pretty much disappeared?
Yeah, it's dropped substantially. We're the last remaining newsprint manufacturer. We've got one machine where we make newsprint up at Gondwana and in Mpumalanga. That's the last remaining machine here. As you know, the market has declined significantly over the last few years. There's a little bit of volume that comes through from the advertising stuff that goes into the newspapers, but it's a fraction, you know, of what it used to be. As I said, we've got one machine left, and what we try to do is figure out other grades of paper that we can make on that machine. But it's in decline, and ultimately, you know, we're going to have to figure out what to do with that last remaining machine, because we're not going to be able to fill it with newsprint.
And as far as the future is concerned, Sappi does seem to be well positioned for the way that the world is going towards natural products rather than artificial products. But I guess you have to also balance very carefully how much of the timber you take every year and then put back in. How does that work? Could you just give us some insights there onto your forests? How much of them do you use every year, and how much do you reinvest in that area?
Yeah. We in South Africa, we own and manage about 400,000 hectares. Typically, there's two broad types of trees. There's pine and eucalyptus. Pine takes about 20 years to grow, and eucalyptus about 8 years. And basically, it's a sustainable raw material supply. So, for example, on the eucalyptus side, you would chop about 1/8 every year, but you're replanting the same amount, and therefore you have a sustainable raw material supply. I think for Sappi's future, the ability to grow our forestry footprint in South Africa is probably constrained because just merely because of our geography and our climate. We're always on the lookout offshore for opportunities to grow further. But in South Africa, we manage the plantations in a very sustainable manner, and that's why we've got such a great business here.
And where would we see them driving in the car around the country? Where would a Sappi plantation typically?
Mainly in Mpumalanga and in KwaZulu-Natal, particularly down south of Durban. We have a big mill there at Mkomas, and there's a lot of plantations in that area.
So looking ahead for Sappi, perhaps you can just put into context how important or how big the South African part is now, given that the company did go on a big offshore expansion, and you've just spoken about that new plant, the Somerset plant that's coming out in Maine. I mean, how much of the business is South African based?
Yeah. Look, we've got a fabulous South African business. We actually made our third consecutive record profits here. In terms of volume and profit, well, it's actually making better margins than some of the international business. In terms of sales volumes, it's about 30% of our business. So we're a big offshore business, but in terms of profitability, it's probably it's closer to 40% of our business. We export over 1 million tons, mainly the dissolving pulp that we were referring to earlier. So we're a big generator of foreign currency coming into the country. Amazingly, very small proportion of Sappi's business is domestic South Africa. We export probably 85% of our product, either directly, indirectly, out of South Africa. And, we would love to make more investments, particularly up at our mill in Mpumalanga. We think we've got scope there to grow that plant. And, hopefully we can make investments in the near future.
Sappi's a 32 billion rand market cap business. And as you've explained, you are all over the world. So geopolitics has got to be something that you look at all the time. Starting in South Africa, the government of national unity, has that done anything for your state of mind?
Yeah, I think so. We're positive about the work that's being done at Transnet and Eskom. We generate a lot of our own power, right? But we're probably in South Africa about 30% exposed for our energy requirements. So clearly we've been frustrated there, but it does feel like things are getting better. Transnet's been a bigger headache for us because we're such a large exporter. So until very recently, we were having to move all our product via road because the rail network was not working. And that was raw materials coming in, whether it's timber, or we're a big, we have coal fire power stations, or the finished products going down to Durban. It's been a major, major headache. It increases our costs and obviously makes us less efficient. So I would say to you, Alec, that things are getting better. We're optimistic about the new leadership there at Transnet. And it's certainly not out of the woods, but it's much better than it was a year ago.
Do they listen? Do they, in other words, take the input that you would give them?
We find at the senior levels, there's a lot of positive dialogue. But sometimes action on the ground does not follow the leadership. And I think that, you know, particularly with Transnet, the current leadership are getting more involved in the, let's call it the detail and action on the ground, which used to frustrate me in the past, because we would go to these dialogues with, you know, with the officials and all the right things would be said, but then nothing would change on the ground. But it is getting better.
And how much, if it were, let's just imagine a fully efficient Transnet, how much impact would that have on your business relative to where you are today?
That's a good question, Alec. There's some things that are going to take longer to fix. I'll give you an example. We remember when there was the floods a year or two back in KwaZulu-Natal, some of the rail bridges, one specifically south of Durban, was washed away, and they haven't fixed that. We've been told it's going to be fixed, next year sometime. We're still moving the vast majority of our product via road, which is inefficient, but it would run into, hundreds of millions of rands for us.
And then geopolitics globally. We're talking the day after Donald Trump has, his opponent conceded that Trump has won the presidency in the United States. Is this something that concerns you?
Look, Alec, we're obviously still assessing and we have to see how much was rhetoric and how much actually will change. But the one positive for us, what I would say to you, is that we don't really export from South Africa to the U.S. We have an American domestic capacity, and we make our product in the U.S. So as a domestic manufacturer, ironically, you know, when you hear that the Trump administration may do more to support domestic manufacturers, we would see that as a positive. And ironically, we compete against other importers into the U.S. from Asia and China and other jurisdictions as well. So we actually may benefit from tariffs if they were to be introduced. So we have to see what happens, but I don't think there will be a significant negative impact on SAPI.
So there's really three South African companies in that league. Sasol, who've got a big plant in Lake Charles. Clearly yourselves as well. And then Sibanye-Stillwater, who've got the huge palladium operation. So interestingly enough, every side of the coin, there's pleases somebody, whichever way it lands. Just looking ahead though, Steve, the geopolitical challenges around the world, and you being such an important, or exports being so important to SAPI, are there things that keep you awake at night as a consequence of this?
Our biggest concern at the moment is Europe. We're also a big manufacturer in Europe, and unfortunately with the Ukraine war, you know, that's pushed up energy prices and the prices of other raw materials. So our cost base in Europe is not as efficient as it was pre-COVID. And you add that to the fact that the European, and as you know this, the European economy has been very sluggish in the last couple of years, particularly like a place like Germany, which is a huge market for us. Those macro geopolitical challenges in Europe have been particularly challenging, and you know, coming back to your question on Trump, we're not sure what's going to happen with Ukraine and what that may mean for energy prices and the like. So that's probably my most immediate concern at the moment.
And looking ahead, the stuff you can control operationally?
Yeah, we're feeling good. We put out a positive outlook statement for 2025. Volumes continue to pick up. I'm optimistic because global interest rates are coming down. The consumers, whilst they're still stretched, I firmly believe that things will get better. And we're seeing these stimulus packages out of China that can also benefit us as well. So whilst I don't think it's going to be a sharp recovery in the global economy, I'm more optimistic that 25 will be better than 24.
Steve Binney is the Chief Executive of SAPI, and I'm Alec Hogg from biznews.com.